Register Radio is sponsored by Ignatius Press, the premier publisher of outstanding Catholic books, magazines, videos, and music, faithful to the magisterium of the Church. On the web at ignatius.com.
From the National Catholic Register, this is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
And this week on a special edition of Register Radio, we'll be doing a post-election roundtable with Tim Drake and our special guests, Thomas Peters, Cultural Director with the National Organization for Marriage, and Michelle Bauman, Washington, D.C. correspondent for Catholic News Agency and EWTN News. We'll be talking about the election results. We'll talk about the Catholic vote and the outcome on various ballot initiatives. Welcome again to Register Radio. It's a co-production of EWTN and the National Catholic Register. I'm Tom Price, along with Tim Drake, senior writer for the Register. Hello again, Tim.
Hello, Tom. It's always great to be with you.
And you, my friend. In the aftermath of the election, we thought we would use Register Radio this week to talk about the election results. That's what everybody is talking about. Joining us today for a roundtable discussion, Thomas Peters. He's cultural director with the National Organization for Marriage. Welcome, Thomas.
Good to be with you all.
Also, Michelle Bauman. She is the Washington, D.C. correspondent for Catholic News Agency and EWTN. We hope to better understand exactly what happened this week and why it happened. Thank you, Michelle, for being with us today.
Thank you for having me on here.
So, Michelle, I'd like to start with you, first of all, because you covered the campaigns and the election for Catholic News Agency and EWTN News. And I wondered if you could break down a little bit the electorate, who ended up voting for Obama versus Romney, and were there any surprises?
Sure. What we see in the national exit polls is that Obama received the majority of vote from minorities, so the women's vote, and also he overwhelmingly won the African-American vote and about 70% of the Hispanic vote, while Romney won the white vote. You also had Obama winning the youth vote, although by a smaller margin than in 2008. So while he still won, there was less voter intensity there. Interestingly, Romney won the married vote, while Obama won the unmarried vote. Also, interestingly, you saw that Romney actually carried the independent vote, although he didn't end up winning the election. That is one of the most interesting results that I saw. And then the Catholic vote ended up being identical to the popular vote, 50-48 for Obama, which is pretty common for the Catholic vote to reflect the general popular vote.
Now, did either of you happen to see the vote among those who were were not affiliated, the unaffiliated voter?
Yes, I believe it was 73% of the people who said they did not attend any sort of religious service voted for Obama, which is about a mirror image of what the people who attend religious service at least once a week did in terms of support for Romney.
So if we break that down, we would say that those who are religiously affiliated and who are participating in their faith went for Romney versus those who are no religious affiliation went for Obama. That would be correct,
yeah,
right?
Exactly, yeah.
Let's look. I want to talk just a little bit more about the Catholic vote, though, because, when we say Catholic vote, that can mean different things. And if we break that down a little further and say, Catholics who attend Mass at least once a week, does that differ from what we hear as the overall Catholic vote? Did either of you see any statistics on that?
Yes, there was a difference, particularly if you look at the trend from 2008 to this election. The Catholics who were continuing to vote for Obama were those who were less likely to attend religious services, and also Hispanic voters. So those two subgroups continued to heavily favor Obama, whereas the white Catholic vote and the Catholics who attend services at least once a week were favoring Romney. And you saw the biggest shift from 2008 among the white Catholics moving away from Obama towards Romney in this election.
Yeah, if I can just jump in here, I noticed that last night George Weigel was on with Raymond Arroyo on The World Over, and he said that the two groups, what he was categorizing it, the two groups of, quote, Catholics were the pious vote versus the
the baptized pagans, which seems a little harsh to me, but does that kind of lay it out there?
Sounds like Mr. Weigel being Mr. Weigel. I wouldn't try to soundbite his comments. They tend to, you know, deserve a lot of context to make sense of them. But,
sure.
You know, I do think we do see a success in the bishop's efforts to educate Catholics who show up in the pews on Sunday about the religious liberty consequences. Obama won the Catholic vote 54% to 45% in 2008, a 9-point advantage, which was reduced to a 2-point advantage this year. So that's significant progress in terms of, I would say, the Catholic vote reflecting the fact that we faced extraordinary threats to religious freedom in this election. It didn't turn out to be enough, but it's a step in the right direction, and I think that at least is one consolation we can take from the results of this Tuesday.
But just so I'll throw a general question out there. I mean, given all that has happened in regards to the attacks on religious liberty and the HHS mandate, I just want kind of your gut reaction to the vote and whether you were surprised that Americans voted for the status quo. What do you make of that?
I wasn't particularly surprised. I was disappointed. I think we have to pray for a legal reprieve from the HHS mandate, and we have to people who are pro-life, pro-marriage, and pro-religious freedom need to pray for the health and longevity of those who serve on the Supreme Court right now, because the president is very clearly against traditional marriage, against protections for the unborn, against the full expression of religious freedom. And if he gets the chance to fundamentally transform the makeup of the Supreme Court by appointing new appointees when the current members retire, we're in a very serious generational situation. It could be a generation before we see our, you know, the right side of these issues overcome.
Do we have any sense of who might be retiring from the Supreme Court over the next 4 years?
I'm going to get the facts slightly wrong, and maybe Michelle can correct me, but I believe something like 3 or 4 Supreme Court justices turn 80 in the next 4 years.
Mm.
So it's the court, the court tends to be older, but it's very old right now.
Uh-huh.
Is that correct?
Yes, I think you'll see some of the Supreme Court justices deciding when to retire or not based on the fact that Obama was reelected. I'm guessing that Scalia will stay in there, for example. We'll try to, won't be choosing to retire in the next 4 years.
I am Tim Drake. You're listening to Register Radio, and we are having a roundtable discussion on the election results with Thomas Peters, Cultural Director of the National Organization for Marriage, and Michelle Bauman, Washington, D.C. correspondent with the Catholic News Agency and EWTN News. Let's focus a little bit on the religious liberty issue, because, after all, the bishops as a body really put a lot of time, effort, money into trying to educate voters on this, and yet it does appear in some respects that that they failed to kind of completely mobilize voters overall on this front. So I'd like to hear your thoughts on that.
I would just say, as Thomas just said a minute ago, there was a significant shift in the Catholic vote from 2008 to this year. And while the Catholic vote overall did go towards Obama, it was a much narrower margin than 2008. And the thing that makes it a little bit difficult is we can't tell from the exit polls, the initial data, why people chose to vote as they did. So we don't know if the economy, if religious freedom issues or any other issues were their main influences in voting. So it's hard to tell what influence the bishops had, but we do see that there was a movement, not enough to change the election, but we do see that there was a shift among Catholics, particularly among mass-attending Catholics who were in the pews, who were hearing the message, who were hearing the homilies coming from the priests and down from the bishops.
Well, just real quickly, that anecdotally, I do think we have some evidence that there were a couple surveys, I think one done by Catholic Association in advance of the election, showing that the more weekly attending Catholic, mass-attending Catholics learned about the consequences of the HHS mandate, the more they were prone to favor the bishop's position. So I think there's at least some anecdotal evidence that it was an influence in terms of how people voted. But I'll just leave off and continue that later if we come back to it.
The other thing that I had seen was regarding issues. And among those who said that the economy was the more important issue, they tended to vote for Romney. But among those who said health care was the most important issue, they favored Obama. It was, I think, 74% to 25%. So a rather stark difference there in terms of which issue the voter, was latching on to.
Right. Maybe just another point I would raise is that the crafters of the HHS mandate were very clever in making sure that most of the mandate's effects were phased in after the election. And so I think in one sense this was a failure of the bishops to be able to point to concrete examples of Christian Catholic institutions being persecuted for not complying, because most of the mandates phase in on January 1st of 2013. So, a lot of this is about, trying to convince people to trust you that they would double down on this. And I'd say that one of the outcomes of this election is that the Affordable Care Act is practically never going to be repealed. It's going to be right there as an entitlement along with Medicare and, food stamps and other things are just part of the pillars of the liberal state. And that means that there's going to be far more instances of the state dictating to Catholic health care providers and institutions what services they can and cannot provide. And this is going to be a huge life issue going down the road, which is of great concern to myself and others. But just to realize what was at stake here, that was something that the bishops tried to educate on. But I think, frankly, it showed that ultimately that effort failed.
I would just add to that when you talk about health care, the Democratic Party has made very, very clear ties between women's health and abortion and free contraception. And you saw at the Democratic Party, at the Democratic National Convention, you had the president of Planned Parenthood warning that there was a time a century ago when women were not expected to live past age 50, and that if we elected Romney, that he was going to turn back the clock. There's very much, on the issue of healthcare, there were very much these warnings that there were going to be these drastic and dire changes if we elected Romney, if we elected someone who was pro-life. Women should not expect to live past the age of 50. So some of the ideas that were presented in connection with healthcare were very strong, these sort of far-reaching claims being made by the Democratic Party.
I would like to ask if either one of you think that this is a lack of communication. We are just, those of us who stand with the church are just not getting our point across out there in the greater world arena.
I would say, from someone who worked with, two organizations that are politically activists, maybe this is just what you see is, where you think the problem is. It's not a lack of communication, it's a lack of activation. In my experience, there's a lot of, serious Catholics who think that if they vote right on an election day, and if they complain about how poor the candidates are that they're being offered to vote for, they've somehow just discharged their civic duty. Whereas the opponents that I face in the life and marriage issues are people who start with voting, but then spend weeks and months in advance activating in terms of get out the vote phone calls, making donations, canvassing for votes, door knocking,
the ground game,
campaigns. Mm-hmm. Just to give you one example, in Minnesota, where our pro-marriage amendment failed by a very narrow margin, in a state that Romney lost by 10 points, we had a few hundred solid volunteers. The other side claims to have 26,000 volunteers.
Wow.
And in the practical realm of politics, you simply can't win, even when the truth is on your side. If there's 26,000 people against you who are opposed to you enough to put their personal time and treasure on the line to defeat you. That's what I think it's far more a problem of activation. I think a lot of the steps the bishops took with their religious freedom campaign were good steps, like the text messaging campaign and rolling out a website and obviously preaching, which is their charism.
Sure.
But so many Catholics, and this is something that the Catholic Vote attempts to work on, is to provide Catholics with the tangible materials to actually be part of the democratic process at the state, local, and federal level. And that involves, I was up in Maine last weekend where they had another marriage question, putting out signs. And at one point that meant basically we had four full-time staff putting out signs, and the other side had hundreds. So, the truth will not overcome if there are too few people witnessing for it in the real world, in the actual realm of where politics is decided, where people change their minds, where you touch people.
Michelle, anything to add to that before we go to a quick break here?
I would agree that there were a lot of people who were hearing about this and maybe not processing it or not turning out and informing others. If we have the Catholics in the pews who are hearing about it, but if they're not going and telling their friends, their neighbors, their families, then that's not going to be enough. Just as we saw the Catholic vote turn away from Obama, it still wasn't far enough away to change the election. So I would agree with Thomas that there needs to be more taking it to the next step, internalizing the message and saying, now what can I do to inform others and to help spread this message?
Understood. Well, when we return, we're going to continue talking about the election results, but we will take a look at the results of the various ballot initiatives that took place around the country. And for those of us faithful Catholics, the news is not totally bad. This is Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Stay with us.
Hello, I'm Michael Warsaw, Chief Executive of EWTN and publisher of the National Catholic Register. We're in a time in history like no other, and our fight for religious freedom and the need for the new evangelization, it's essential to stay connected via the faithful Catholic content delivered by the Register. We've finally been able to help realize Mother Angelica's dream. She always wanted a newspaper as part of EWTN's media apostolate. Why? Because there's an important catechetical opportunity at the intersection of faith and culture. Since the 1920s, the Register has been advancing the truth of the Magisterium. This valuable resource will help you to better understand the faith and deepen your relationship with our Lord. Join the growing ranks of Register subscribers today and access the one source of leading voices and opinions concerning the issues that matter most to you.
To start your subscription to the National Catholic Register today, go to EWTN.com and click on the banner for the Register or call 800-854-6316. That's EWTN.com and click on the Register subscription banner or call 800-854-6316.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
And welcome back. Along with Tim Drake, I'm Tom Price, along with Thomas Peters and Michelle Bauman. Before the break, we mentioned that the news on the state, local, regional level was not all bad. I would like to talk with Michelle about what happened there in Massachusetts, the defeat of the Massachusetts ballot measure rejecting assisted suicide. That's actually quite good, isn't it?
Yes, that's very good. And what you had there was a ballot measure. It was called the Death with Dignity Initiative. But what it was a measure to allow patients who were terminally ill and given less than 6 months to live, doctors could prescribe lethal drugs to them and they could take them to commit suicide. And that was rejected by voters. And we had seen both the Massachusetts Catholic Conference and Cardinal O'Malley really working hard to inform voters about that and about some of the problems with that, how it's not dignified, and some of the more practical problems. It didn't require a psychological evaluation to see if the patients had treatable illnesses such as depression. Uh-huh. It could be abused. There were a number of problems with that, and Cardinal O'Malley really took the lead in informing voters about that.
I would like to ask really both of you about the role more and more that semantics are playing in all this. When you talk about something called death with dignity, that sounds so nice, just like Affordable Care Act sounds nice. And we could even go back and look at the word choice, which sounds nice.
I would agree that semantics often cloak a far darker agenda, and I just commend all the pro-life advocates in Massachusetts for really, you know, being kind of policy wonks and going to papers and explaining really in the minutia what this bill as written actually would have implied for the dignity and life of the elderly. So just a fact to toss in there, this measure was, we were down 30 points in September, so they overcame huge margins, huge odds by working hard, and it really is a very bright silver lining in a gathering storm. So just want to commend all those people who just, you know, didn't care what the stakes, what the odds were. They just fought very hard, and they won. I think they won by less than 30,000 votes out of three main casts, so a very close victory.
And Tom, you you worked very hard on the marriage initiatives in Maine, Maryland, Minnesota, and Washington. And why don't you just provide for us an overview of what happened in those states?
Sure. Well, we lost in all four. It was a hard-fought campaign. In Minnesota, we were trying to introduce a marriage protection amendment to put the definition of marriage safely within the Constitution so it couldn't be redefined by judges or overturned by legislatures. In Maine, our opponents put a ballot initiative on the ballot to legalize same-sex marriage, and were successful. And in Maryland and in Washington State, we had put a referendum to the people to try to overturn gay marriage there, and we were unsuccessful in both those states. We were outraised by our opponents by a margin of at least 4-1, sometimes 8-1. And, you know, that's not counting the huge skewing provided by the mainstream media, only presenting basically our opponent's side. And we came up short. You know, there's one interesting point to make, however, is that in every one of these four states, more people voted to protect marriage than voted for Mitt Romney. And so, you know, even in deep blue states, which all four of these were, that went to President Obama by 10 points or more, marriage only lost by a small margin, and that was with huge advantages on its side. And I talked about the personnel inequality and the fundraising inequality. And I think the message that it sends to Catholics and Christians is that marriage will not win if it's not defended, and that we have to have the same convictions and then, you know, contribute the same resources protecting marriage as its opponents are contributing to defeat it.
And what about other ballot initiatives? I know that we had the legalization of marijuana in Colorado and Washington, but there were also some ballot initiatives in states to try to limit Obamacare and also to protect religious liberty. And how did those fare?
Colorado and Washington both voted to legalize marijuana recreationally for the first time. And with that, I know particularly with the Colorado one, the part of that which does not always get attention is that part of that amendment says that the recreational marijuana will be taxed, and the first $40 million in revenue annually will go towards the Public School Capital Construction Assistance Fund. So that might have been part of what drove some people to vote for it if they didn't have terribly strong feelings about marijuana, was the fact that, you know, a lot of money is now going to be going into the public school system. And formerly, marijuana had been legal medicinally, but that might have been what drove a lot of voters to push it forward recreationally as well.
So to legalize marijuana so that we can raise money for the schools.
Yes.
Right?
Okay. Wow.
Well, it's the same sort of, you know, devil's bargain that they use to promote the lottery and gambling, saying, oh, it's for the schools,
yeah,
where it's mostly just to pad a bunch of bureaucrats between the lotto and the schools don't get hardly anything from it. So Maryland voted for liberalize gambling for, you know, the same ostensible reason.
We just have about a minute left, and I want to say, in all of this, I mean, is there any bright light in any of this for Catholics? I mean, it really does seem like pretty bad news all around.
I think we can see a bright light in every Catholic who sincerely prayed for the outcome of the election, who sincerely, you know, expressed their civil right to vote and did everything in their power. My hat is off to you. And now we just have to do the long, hard work of continuing to fight. Tom Hoops had a great comment for Catholic vote readers on Wednesday. He said, you know, God's plan throughout history has always been losing the battles but winning the war. We lost some battles today, but we know who wins the war. And just continue on. But I really want to give my thanks to everyone. You know, it's a small minority in some cases who fought for these things, but I'm just so incredibly impressed by them, and just thank you for their witness.
We got about 30 seconds, Michelle.
I would just add that I've heard a lot of people within the pro-life and marriage and religious freedom movement saying that this is going to be a time to refocus and really renew our efforts, especially during this year of faith for Catholics, as we're called to come back to the essentials of our faith and really try to reflect and grow so that we can be witnesses for other people. So I think that's going to be a big focus, you know, over the next several months.
Yeah, fantastic. A year of faith. Tom and Michelle, I want to thank you both for being with us on Register Radio, and thanks for a great show.
Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
My thanks as well to our special guests. Don't forget, you can listen to this very important show again by going to ncregister.com. Just look for the microphone icon to listen or download the show. Thanks for joining us on Register Radio. For all of us at the Register and here at EWTN, I'm Tom Price. See you next week.
For more information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Register Radio is sponsored by Ignatius Press, the premier publisher of outstanding Catholic books, magazines, videos, and music, faithful to the magisterium of the Church. On the web at ignatius.com.